coming out, and for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
We draw your attention to verses 54 and 55 of chapter Araf from the Holy Quran, recited by Mr. Ali Asghar Burumand.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Inna رَبَّكُمُ اللَّهُ الَّذِي خَلَقَ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ فِي سِتَّةِ أَيَّامٍ خَلَقَ السماوات والأرض في ستة أيام ثم استوى على العرش ثم استوى على العرش يغشي الليل النهار يطلبه حثيثا يطلبه حثيثا والشمس والقمر والنجوم مسخرات بأمره ألا له الخلق والأمر تبارك الله رب العالمين ادعوا ربكم تضرعا وخفية ادعوا ربكم تضرعا إنه لا يحب المعتدين. صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Surely, your Lord is Allah, who created the heavens and the earth in six periods of time, and He is firm in power. He throws the veil of night over the day, which it pursues incessantly, and He created the sun and the moon and the stars, made subservient by His command. Surely, His is the creation and the command. Blessed is Allah, the Lord of the worlds. Call on your Lord humbly and secretly. Surely, He does not love those who exceed the limits.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's foreign minister says lifting Trump's sanctions is not negotiating leverage. Officials in Gaza say the destruction of civic structure during the Israeli onslaught makes it more difficult to treat hundreds of people injured in the attacks. Also in the headlines, people in Minneapolis mark the first anniversary of the murder of African-American George Floyd by a white police officer. Iran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, says removing the sanctions imposed by former U.S. President Donald Trump against Tehran is a legal and moral obligation. On his Twitter page, Zarif said, "The removal of the sanctions is not negotiating leverage." He said the sanctions didn't work for Trump and will not work for the current U.S. administration either. On Sunday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said it remains unclear whether Tehran is ready and willing to take what he called necessary steps to return to compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal. The agreement got into trouble after the U.S. pulled out of it in 2018. Iran and the remaining signatories are now engaged in talks to revive the accord. Iran has repeatedly emphasized that Washington has to take the first step by removing all the sanctions verifiably. Iranian intelligence forces have dismantled three terrorist groups and seized large amounts of explosive devices as well as weapons from them, according to the intelligence ministry. One of the groups was responsible for killing a teenager and injuring several others in a March attack in the southeastern province of Sistan Baluchistan. All members of the group were arrested, the ministry said. Members of another Europe-based terror team were detained in the same province. They had planned to attack religious centers there. Also, two members of an armed network planning terror raids, were killed in northwestern Iran. Intelligence Ministry has said the countries that provide a safe haven for terror groups must be held accountable. Many believe that if Iran wants to emerge as an economically prosperous country, then the person who will be elected as the next president should give priority to the domestic capabilities. Experts say, while the country has made tangible progress in science and technology, the pace of economic progress must be expedited. Humen Abedi reports.
With less than a month to go until the presidential election in Iran, people are discussing about the policies the next president must follow to solve the problems. Out of over 400 contenders, about 40 heavyweight ones claim their number one goal is to solve economic problems that have been growing during the past years, especially after Washington's unilateral sanctions. In order to see how these plans are feasible, we talked to some lawmakers regarding the objectives every hopeful must have in mind.
In every election, the economy is of great significance to people, especially at a time they've experienced tough times in the face of economic issues. Hopefuls make promises, but people must be watchful not to pin hope on their slogans. Their slogans must have a logical basis. In my opinion, what the country needs in terms of economy is a look at international capabilities. Of course, the sanctions are biting, but we can't say all our economic problems are because of the sanctions. Most of our economic issues are the result of not paying attention to domestic capabilities.
Another lawmaker told us the most important things a president must follow are transparency and accountability.
People expect the runners to be honest with them. They say the next president must have a comprehensive plan for the economic issues. It means the result of their plans must be seen in the economic basket of the families. Within the past 8 years, the government was waiting for decisions to be made outside the country. The next president should fight against corruption and injustice.
The MPs stressed that having good relations with the world for economic improvement is a must, but each country should rely on its own capabilities.
The livelihood of people and solving economic problems is the main slogan of most of the hopefuls for the 13th presidential election of Iran. They also say that they have detailed plans to improve the life quality of people. Humen Abedi, Tehran.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas warns Israel against forced expulsion of Palestinian residents in the Flashpoint neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds. The warning comes amid reports that Palestinians living in the neighborhood have been placed under a siege by regime forces. A Hamas spokesman said the movement is prepared to confront any Israeli scheme that would displace Palestinians in al-Quds or change its character into a Jewish city. Abdul Latif al-Ghanu also warned Israel against attacking the Al-Aqsa Mosque, stressing that such incursions would not be left unanswered. Earlier this month, Sheikh Jarrah was the site of protests as dozens of Palestinians living there faced forced expulsion. An Israeli crackdown on protesters later spread to Al-Aqsa Mosque, prompting Hamas to launch retaliatory rocket attacks. Political commentator Jason Androhe believes Israel would continue its provocative actions in Jerusalem al-Quds and play victim when it is confronted by Palestinian resistance groups.
Israel is going to continue doing provocative acts that are going to provoke Hamas into retaliation. And then when Hamas retaliates for being attacked, then Israel is going to cry victim and say, look, we tried to have a peaceful agreement, we had a ceasefire, and then all of a sudden it started up again. That's literally the way that Israel operates on a victim complex when they are the victimizers the entire time. And that's the way that the mainstream media tends to portray this all the time, as Israel did nothing wrong, and it's just these people, Palestinians, that are attacking them for no reason other than some kind of, you know, alleged anti-Semitism, and that's and that kind of dishonesty. Imagine people getting mad that you demolish their homes and build new settlements for, I mean, that one example of a couple from Brooklyn onto a Palestinian home. I mean, of course that's going to elicit anger from the people who are losing their homes and their land, and that we can go into the whole amount of Palestinian territory, which is shrinking and shrinking by the decade. But that is it. Israel's going to provoke a retaliation from Hamas, then it's going to cry victim, and then it's going to go out to the world saying, but poor us, why, what did we ever do to anyone?
The Gaza Strip is still reeling from deaths and destruction caused by Israel's airstrikes and shelling of civilian homes and vital infrastructure in the besieged Palestinian territory. Nearly 280 Gazans were killed and over 1,900 injured in 11 days of the Israeli aggression before a ceasefire last Friday. Local officials and international agencies say the destruction of civic structure makes it more difficult to treat the injured and deal with a surge in coronavirus cases there. Meanwhile, the International Committee of the Red Cross has said it is sending medical equipment and supplies to Gaza to treat the injured and cope with the collapsed infrastructure. According to the UN Humanitarian Coordinator, the World Health Organization and other institutions also plan to ship coronavirus vaccines to Gaza within days. Officials in Gaza say the reconstruction will cost tens of millions of dollars. People in the Pakistani city of Karachi have held a demonstration to show solidarity with Palestinians and condemn Israeli atrocities against them. Demonstrators in Karachi chanted anti-Israeli slogans calling for an end to the regime's occupation of Palestinian land. Similar protests were also held in other parts of the world in support of the Palestinians. In the British capital, London, scuffles broke out between police and protesters in front of the Israeli embassy. People also staged rallies in the U.S. city of San Francisco, Lebanese capital of Beirut, as well as the French capital of Paris. They celebrated the victory of Palestinians in the face of the recent deadly Israeli aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip. Tens of thousands of Pakistani protesters have taken to the streets to vent their anger over war crimes of Israel, that is, against unarmed Palestinians. Javed Rana is in Islamabad.
A massive public outpouring against Israel in Pakistan. The streets of the mega city of Karachi flooded with protesters in solidarity with Palestinians. There is no letup to anti-Israel protest in this 220 million populated Muslim country after Israel attacked and desecrated Islam's third holiest site in the eastern Jerusalem al-Quds and impose a unilateral war on Gaza. The huge collateral and human losses in the latest round of one-sided war imposed on unarmed Palestinians has once again became a rallying point to unify people from all segments of the society in Pakistan to join hands to protest against Israel.
We thank to Allah. Today, people in every Muslim country stand by Palestinians. And by God willing, we would continue our war against Israel until we liberate Al-Quds Mosque.
The anti-Israel protests have been swelling in Pakistan despite a fragile ceasefire between Israel and Hamas administration in Gaza. Pakistan's government is feeling the heat of public pressure, which is reflected in country's foreign minister's rare and blunt remarks about Western media outlets on how they have been whitewashing war crimes of Israel against Palestinians.
Israel is losing out. They're losing the media war despite their connections. They are losing the media war. The tide is turning.
What are their connections?
Deep pockets.
What does that mean?
Well, they're very influential people. I mean, they control media.
I would call that an anti-Semitic remark.
Pakistan has rejected criticism of pro-Israeli lobbies and Western media, claiming that country's foreign minister's remarks were anti-Semitic. On the contrary, foreign minister's analogy about nexus between Israel and Western media has been welcomed across the Muslim world. Islamabad says the Western media has been covering up the massacre of Palestinians by propagating it as Israel's right of self-defense. On the other hand, whenever leaders of the Muslim countries speak truth about Israel's aggression and apartheid state's overgrown influence on Western media to whitewash its war crimes, they call it anti-Semitic. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
The leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement has called for all-out efforts to help Palestinians in their struggle against the Israeli regime.
This entity will fall. This entity will fade away. This entity will be defeated. And therefore, even before they are down, we will witness this. And therefore, it is our duty in order to take on all efforts, to shoulder all responsibilities to support Palestine and all the efforts in order to support the Palestinian people.
Abdul Malik al-Houthi said the Yemeni people will spare no efforts to help Palestinians resistance groups in their fight against Israel. He said Israel's 11-day aggression against Gaza resulted in Palestinians' victory. He added that while that happened despite the fact that the regime received support from the U.S. and the U.K., al-Houthi also slammed as an act of treason the normalization deal certain Arab states have clinched with Israel in recent months. He said the agreements aimed to undermine support for the Palestinian cause, but they failed to achieve their goal. The French foreign minister has warned of the risk of, quote, long-lasting apartheid in Israel. Jean-Yves Le Drian said Israel produces apartheid by acting according to what he called a single state logic in maintaining the status quo. He stressed that the so-called two-state solution is the only way to eliminate apartheid. The top French diplomat made the comments in reference to recent unrest in several Israeli cities. The unrest broke out over the regime's crackdown against Palestinians in Jerusalem al-Quds. Last month, Human Rights Watch said Israel's persecution of Palestinians amounts to crimes against humanity and crimes of apartheid. The UN has repeatedly stated that Israel imposes an apartheid regime of racial discrimination on the Palestinian people. A prominent U.S. bishop and civil rights activist has voiced support for the Palestinian people. He has also criticized Washington's economic support for Israel as it commits human rights abuses in Palestine. Our correspondent, Richard Sudan, has more.
Bishop Talbot Swan, a highly respected civil rights activist, expressed a sympathy and solidarity among the African-American community for the Palestinians as outrage over Israel's actions has continued to grow.
If any people should resonate with what's going on in Palestine, it's black people in America. Even when we look at what's happening on the streets in our nation, many police departments across America actually go to Israel to be trained by the military in so-called counterterrorism strategies. And then they come here into black communities and employ those strategies on black citizens. So we fully understand their struggle. It resonates with us, and we stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people.
For many, the fact the U.S. government funds Israel while reparations owed to black Americans have yet to be paid is hypocritical.
They can find nearly $4 billion a year to give to Israel, but they can't find any money to give to African Americans who descended from enslaved Africans. It's a travesty, it's a shame, and we're not asking for a handout. We're not asking for you to do us a favor. That's money that is owed. That's a debt that the United States has yet to pay.
The demands for the U.S. to stop funding Palestinian oppression and to implement justice for black America will continue as long as the status quo remains in place. Support for the Palestinians has undoubtedly intensified, with millions of people around the world condemning Israel, demanding an end to the occupation of Palestine. Richard Sudan, London.
And that's it with international news.
Thank you.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makes the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
the 13th presidential election. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Iran's 13th presidential election is going to be held on June 18th. Election was one of the rightful demands of people through the despotic rule of Pahlavi regime. But it materialized after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. As it has been mentioned several times, the first election took place in the form of the Referendum for Islamic Republic System of Government, holding of regular elections after the victory of the Islamic Revolution shows the important status of election in the Islamic system. The constant incidence of this popular trend indicates that this principle has been internalized in the political structure of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The Iranian constitution emphasizes that the ruling system is based on people's will and vote. Accordingly, all the pillars of the system are built up through direct or indirect vote of people. Article 56 of the Constitution addresses the principle of religious popular rule in Iran. It reads, "Absolute rule on the world and human being belongs to God, and He has given human being the authority over his social fate. No one can deny him this divine right or put it at the service of the interest of an individual or group. And the nation exercises this God-given right through the ways that will be mentioned in the next articles." Elections have always consolidated the popular pillars of the Islamic Republic. Although there have been a variety of opinions and approaches in elections, it has always been the people who have made their fate via their votes. This year too, Iran is going to hold the 13th presidential election. President is not a ceremonial official in the Islamic Republic system. He has very high authorities and important responsibilities. He is the head of one of the three branches of governance, namely the executive branch. In view of this, choosing the best among the candidates will accelerate the forward move of economic, social, cultural, trade, and political programs. Article 115 of the Constitution says the president should be elected from among the religious and political men who have these qualifications. Originally Iranian, Iranian nationality, manager and prudence, good precedence, trustworthiness and piety, faithful and believing in the basics of the Islamic Republic of Iran and the official religion of the country. In other countries too, there are indexes and criteria for qualification of presidential candidates. For instance, paragraph 44 of the French elections law reads, "Every man or woman who enjoys the conditions of the electors can also nominate themselves for election. They can be elected provided that they are not included in disqualification or non-electability which has been predicted in the law." Paragraph 112 of French election law also says that the nominees should be at least 23 years old. Meanwhile, according to the law of June 18, 1976, in order to decrease the number of presidential candidates, each of the candidates has to be supported and approved by a number of political figures. Leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei on February 17, 2021, described the upcoming presidential election as a great opportunity for the country, saying, "Of course, the opponents of the Islamic Republic don't like the system to use this important opportunity and capacity for the progress of the country, but the people's fervent and revolutionary participation in the election will lead to the country's security and warding off the enemies and reducing their avarice. Thus, this opportunity should not be lost." Then the leader underlined, "The remedy for the chronic pains of the country depends on the fervor of the election and people's public turnout, and then the choosing of the most qualified and the appropriate personality. Elections in the political system of the Islamic Iran are based on popular rule and the effectiveness of participation in decision-making. Election in Iran is a religious and social obligation. It is manifested as a part of the individual rights of people. In view of this, people participate in four elections to choose president, members of parliament, members of city and village Islamic councils, and the Guardians Council. Accordingly, holding of elections has always cemented the popular pillars of the Islamic Republic system, and the activists of political and social arenas present their views and plans in various fields to set the ground for election of the most qualified person."
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Economic divide.
Hello, welcome to Economic Divide with me, Kavit Taflay. It has been weeks since the Iran nuclear talks began in Vienna, and we have heard nothing but Iran wanting the sanctions to be removed by the U.S. Yet, that has not happened. What has happened? Well, the talks have continued. Is that a sign of progress? That's what we're going to try to find out in today's program. Coming up, the latest on the Vienna talks. Where do things stand? Have the talks hit an impasse? What are the new U.S. excessive demands all about, like the destruction of centrifuges? Also, a review of terminologies that we are now all too familiar with, imposed, reimposed, and relabeled. These are what Iran's lead negotiator has requested to be removed time and again, but the European side and the U.S. are not listening. And finally, even if there is a deal, will it work? Will Iran gain the economic benefits that it should enjoy? plus U.S. governors and state legislators able to go around the State Department, that's an exclusive economic divide that's going to be coming up later.
It's been weeks since the Iran nuclear talks began in Vienna. One would think that there should be something that should have come out of the talks. Yet the only sign of any kind of success is that the talks are continuing. At the same time, there are signs that the talks have hit an impasse. Here are some key issues pointing to that direction. The U.S. wants the destruction of Iran's new generation centrifuges, return for a temporary suspension of some of the sanctions related to the nuclear deal. This is while under the JCPOA, Iran's advanced centrifuges, including the IR-4, IR-6, and IR-9, must be stored away under the supervision of the International Atomic Energy Agency and not destroyed. The new demands have been put forward while the U.S. has not even agreed to remove all the JCPOA-related sanctions.
We are, though, nonetheless, pleased that Iran has continued to agree to engage in discussions. In direct discussions with us and with our partners on how we move forward and what is needed to allow us to move back into the JOPCA so that we're part of it again, that we should have never gotten out of it, in my view, without us making concessions that we're just not willing to make.
Washington is also complicating the talks by insisting on keeping in place 500 anti-Iran sanctions. This would prevent Iran from benefiting from the economic privileges offered under the JCPOA. This will also get in the way of Iran normalizing its trade relations with the rest of the world in contravention of Article 29 of the deal.
In this Q&A segment, we have with us Koichiro Tanaka. He's a professor at the Graduate School for Media and Governance at Keio University. He's also a joint board member and president, and he's a senior analyst and head of the Iran program. Mr. Tanaka, welcome. First, was the idea of classifying the Iran sanctions into removable, negotiable, and non-removable. Then came the reimposed, imposed, and relabeled idea. Which basically was a hurdle regarding the sanctions. This came before the centrifuge destruction demand. Is the U.S. trying to buy time, or is it trying to get as much sanctions to remain in place, which Iran has rejected all of them outright?
Well, regarding the sanctions, I think that there are plenty of sanctions in place as of today that keep Iran out from the or away from the international trade normalization process. So the Americans don't actually need all those, but still they are looking for the things back at home, meaning that they are trying to, say, satisfy their own people, including the members of the Congress, that this is not the simple return to the old JCPOA that existed between 2015 to early 2017. For that sake, I believe the United States, the current administration in Washington, would continue to deal with the matters as they wish.
Okay, we appreciate that, Mr. Tanaka. All right, the U.S. has exerted the most severe sanctions, as the U.S. Secretary of Treasury, Steven Mnuchin, stated, like in this instance.
As previously announced by the President, we are announcing additional sanctions against the Iranian regime as a result of the attack on U.S. and allied troops. First, the President is issuing an executive order authorizing the imposition of additional sanctions against any individual owning, operating, trading with, or assisting sectors of the Iranian economy, including construction, manufacturing, textiles, and mining.
Well, here, the Iranian Foreign Minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, explains the U.S. state of mind on Iran as seen through the lens of the former President, Donald Trump.
I believe President Trump, unfortunately, does not have good advisors.
He's been waiting for Iranian government's collapse since he withdrew from the nuclear deal. At that time, John Bolton promised him that maximum pressure will bring us to our knees within a few months. Now the United States can come back to the negotiating table, but unfortunately, the suggestions by Macron and by Abe and others have all fallen onto deaf ears, because President Trump, as I told you, has been convinced that we are about to collapse.
It's time now for a quick break here on Economic Divide, but do stay tuned. There's plenty more coming up in just a short while. The Iran nuclear talks in Vienna are still ongoing. After weeks of talks, some fundamental yet very simple questions are asked. Are they moving forward? Are the talks deadlocked? Has the U.S. agreed to lift all the sanctions? Well, the answer to all those questions is a resounding maybe. That points to the fact that perhaps there is not a clear picture that is emerging from the talks in order to get an idea of what is actually going on.
We negotiate behind the tables, not through media. The positions taken in the media is something, the real positions on the table is something else.
But what could that real position that is something else be? Iran has said that the U.S. needs to lift all of its sanctions. First, let's take a look at how the different ways the U.S. wants to keep sanctions in place. Now, it has asked for separating sanctions into imposed, reimposed, or relabeled categories. Now, Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has been quick to point out to the U.S. to not categorize or differentiate between the sanctions, since if the shared goal is for Iran to return to full compliance with the deal, all sanctions need to be lifted. Now, at the bottom of this tweet, as you can see over here, all Trump sanctions were anti-JCPOA and must be removed without distinction between arbitrary designations. But these three descriptions actually came after another three key categories of sanctions were introduced prior. They were called removable ones, and then negotiable ones, and non-removable. The idea of classifying the Iran sanctions into removable, negotiable, and non-removable was seriously at odds with what the Americans said at the beginning. What is the U.S. aim? To categorize sanctions so as to have leverage and control on Iran. Well, that is at least the way it looks. Iran has been clear on these futile U.S. efforts from the beginning. After an offer for talks from the U.S. was made initially, Iran renewed its call for the U.S. to lift all sanctions imposed by the former President Donald Trump, as relayed by the Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif. In a tweet, he stated that Iran would immediately reverse its retaliatory measures if the U.S. unconditionally and effectively lifted all sanctions imposed, reimposed, or relabeled by Trump. Now, the Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman, Saeed Khatibzadeh, in line and step with Iran's foreign minister, also relayed the same message, almost verbatim, as seen here in this tweet. Media spinning can't change the fact that, unlike the U.S., Iran remains a JCPOA participant. The only U.S. path back to the deal is full compliance and effective removal of all imposed, reimposed, and relabeled sanctions. Well, there's also this notion that the sanctions that the former U.S. President Donald Trump imposed will take a long time for them to be removed. Well, let's hear from the horse's mouth about the imposition and the removal of sanctions.
I look forward to the day when sanctions can be finally lifted and Iran can become a peaceful, prosperous, and productive nation. That can go very quickly. It can be tomorrow. It can also be in years from now.
Tomorrow, years from now? He never did give an answer that one can really rely on, but Iran's lead negotiator, Basar Afshi, gave us a realistic view on that when asked by our very own Homolesky. This was his answer on April 9th.
And just on, while we were speaking about the sanctions, illegal discussions, what kind of sanctions removal is being talked about? Is it removal with guarantees that they cannot be reimposed, or a temporary suspension, or suspension that requires extension?
Well, you know, we have to back go model in the JCPOA. They are sanctions which should be terminated, and the U.S. president has the authority to terminate them, so that they should be obviously terminated through executive orders. And there are sanctions which are actually the result of the Congress, you know, legislation. For them, the president could only waive.
and this has been mentioned in the JCPOA. So we want all those sanctions be reversed. Whatever imposed during this Trump administration, whatever imposed or reimposed or relabeled during Trump administration, and whatever is mentioned in the JCPOA should be lifted, and they should reverse whatever has been done, and I think the Americans know best how to do that.
Well, at this stage, the talks, though still ongoing, have not revealed any true advancements. We have learned about the excessive demands that have been made by the U.S., which is the perfect time, actually, to ask this from one of our guests who's going to join us for this segment. John McLean is a Tokyo-based independent foreign policy and financial analyst. He's also a Japan-focused coordinator. He's the author of a U.S. declaration of war on Iran. Okay, John, welcome. The Iran nuclear talks in Vienna is risking falling apart due to the U.S. excessive demands. We learned that the U.S. has relayed that to the Europeans, wanting the destruction of Iran's new generation centrifuges in return for a temporary suspension of some of the sanctions related to the nuclear deal. Why would it make such a demand, knowing that Iran would reject it, and not to mention that this could actually derail the talks altogether?
Well, I've seen these reports about the U.S. making demands that centrifuges be destroyed before there's any return to the JCPOA agreement. As a general comment, there has to be negotiations first, and then there has to be an agreement on what the two sides are going to do. So if Iran ultimately, under an agreement, has to restrict or maybe even destroy, but somehow restrict or limit centrifuges or other facilities, then these things should come under the supervision of the IAEA.
I have come here to do business, but I doubt that there is the same seriousness in the other side. If the U.S. is serious, they should be prepared to lift all sanctions that they have imposed or reimposed against Iran. And after verification, we certainly go back to full compliance. Now we are working on the measures that both sides should take. Once we have done with this, and once we know exactly what the U.S. should do and what Iran should do, then we have to work on the question of sequence and verification. This round of negotiations is the time for the U.S. to present the list, and I hope that I can go back to Tehran with the list of sanctions which should be lifted. The most important question is to talk about the sequence, because we have already talked about measures. Well, on the details of negotiations, of course, sanctions are a very serious question, and actually the most important question for us. We have already entered into the different aspects of that. It's a very complicated issue, and as you know, sanctions have different categories, and we have to deal with all of them. The problem or the challenge is about the sequence of who should come first, who should come first to full compliance. All sanctions should be lifted, all sanctions which are mentioned in the JCPOA, and any new sanctions imposed after the adoption day of the JCPOA, including everything during Trump administration.
It's legitimate for them to lift it all at once, and it's an important issue.
But will they do it? Have they agreed?
They have undertaken to do it, but we say that they must put it into action, turn their commitments into action. The current sticking point, number one sticking point, is U.S. to lift its sanctions, all its sanctions, not just the primary sanction against Iran, but also lift all its sanctions of long-term jurisdiction in nature involving the third-party entities and the individuals. China maintained that all U.S. sanctions should be lifted immediately. May it concern sanction against Iran or
its long-term jurisdiction measures affecting third country entities and individuals, including those on Chinese. So we are looking forward to such a drafting exercise. So it's just axiomatic that U.S. should abolish all its unilateral sanctions against Iran, as well as any third party in the first place, before Iran move to implement the provisions on the JCPOA accordingly.
It's time now to take a look at our info news section, where we review some of the top stories that we deemed to highlight for this program. Our first story concerns U.S. Big Pharma. A film actually came out highlighting what they have done. The firms use bribery, dodgy marketing, and shady political deals to make fortunes. We know that this has been covered before, but it has reached a new epidemic levels. And what they did, they got millions of Americans to get hooked on their super strong painkillers. We know that this epidemic has reached such proportions that in the previous U.S. administration, it deemed to be a national emergency of sorts. Moving on to our next item concerns U.S. infrastructure. Now, this past week, an oil pipeline cyber attack exposed America's multi-trillion dollar infrastructure security crisis. What is this all about? Well, the oil pipeline that was hacked because it's controlled by computer systems was unable to deliver gasoline to the pumps. Basically, the cyber attack prompted the shutdown of the biggest energy infrastructure in the United States, which covered a number of U.S. states, mostly on the eastern side of the country. Next, crypto mayhem. In this particular case, Bitcoin, the price plunge resulted in $365 billion wipeout. That continues till today. Why did that happen? It was a result of a tweet. You had the price drop due to Elon Musk, who said that Tesla no longer accepted Bitcoin. So that prompted somewhat of a sell-off, as mentioned, $365 billion, which is increasing even to this day. And that is the reason that he stated environmental concerns. He said the huge use of fossil fuels in mining Bitcoin is something that he can't tolerate anymore as a result to lead to that sell-off. Finally, unemployment. In this particular case, we take a look at India. It's on the brink of an unemployment crisis, registering at this point at 8%. The sector to have been hit hard, salaried employees, the biggest loss of employment was for the year 2020-2021. Again, a result of the pandemic, and that figure could actually go a lot higher. Time to bring back John McLean for this Q&A segment. John, Washington's insistence on keeping these 500 organizations or people and organizations under sanctions will prevent Iran from benefiting from the economic privileges that it's entitled to under the JCPOA. It's also going to get in the way of Iran normalizing its trade relations with the rest of the world, which is a contravention of Article 29 of the deal. And this is kind of reminiscent of the 2015 deal when Iran signed back then, yet it did not reap the benefits that it was entitled to, because one of the reasons the U.S. threatened other countries from doing business with Iran. And therefore, this sounds like a lopsided deal, which ultimately will end up being rejected by Iran.
Well, you know, the U.S. has tied itself into knots with all these sanctions, whether they're broad-based sanctions against industries such as the banking industry or the energy industry or the shipping industry, and just a whole lot of sanctions against individuals. So obviously, if the U.S. removes a certain type of sanctions, perhaps sanctions on industries such as banking or shipping or the energy sector, but leaves in place a large number of sanctions against individuals, which effectively, or particular businesses or particular units of government, which effectively prevents those individuals or maybe companies or units of government from returning to the international economy.
All right, we do appreciate that. That's John McLean, who is a Tokyo-based independent foreign policy and financial analyst, with his statements there. Thank you so much for that. But we have saved the best for last. This piece of information has been actually overlooked when it comes to the Iran nuclear talks. At least it seems that way. It has come to light that not only can the U.S. Congress make things complicated for Tehran, even U.S. state and local organizations can cause headaches for Iran. And this is a piece overlooked, but very important, which deems the title ED exclusive.
The JCPOA did not envisage that these sanctions, either owned or either, say, implemented by individual states or the Congress of its individual states, would be removed immediately, or that the federal government would have authority over the individual states to remove that kind of sanction.
The Iran nuclear talks and the U.S. pullout from the international agreement has exposed one big truth: the failure of trust in signing an agreement with the U.S. There's no other way of looking at it. The U.S. pulled out of the deal. Iran wants to go back to the deal as it was, but the U.S. is adding its own conditions, especially when it comes to sanctions. Now, whether a deal is signed or not, who has more to lose? Or should I ask, who has more to gain? Well, Iran has already conformed itself to living with sanctions. It's done so for decades. It has already aligned itself for some time with the soon-to-be number one economy in the world, China, along with other countries who know the value of trade with Iran. The U.S. administration, headed by Joe Biden, needs to make its mind up whether it wants to come on board or not. Time is running out, and it's the Western side that has the most to lose. That does it for this edition of Economic Divide. Thanks for tuning in. From Mikhail Tavlai and the entire team is goodbye until the next program.
Racial justice advocates accuse Louisiana State Police of attempting to cover up the fatal 2019 arrest of an unarmed black motorist whom troopers stunned, punched, kicked, dragged face down on the pavement and left handcuffed on the ground for more than 9 minutes after the Associated Press published video it obtained of the deadly encounter. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Brett Wilkins Ryder. This article is published under the heading Tortured to Death. Video showing fatal Louisiana arrest of unarmed black man sparks outrage. Stay tuned for the details, please. Racial justice advocates accuse Louisiana State Police of attempting to cover up the fatal 2019 arrest of an unarmed black motorist whom troopers stunned, punched, kicked, dragged face down on the pavement and left handcuffed on the ground for more than 9 minutes after the Associated Press published video it obtained of the deadly encounter. The AP reports Louisiana State Police LSP officials initially told the relatives of the Ronald Green that the 49-year-old barber died from injuries sustained in a car crash that occurred as he led troopers on a high-speed chase following an unspecified traffic violation outside Monroe on May 10, 2019. However, the AP obtained police body camera footage that authorities withheld for 2 years, showing Green desperately apologizing as white officers brutally arrest him, repeatedly shooting him with a stun gun as he raises his hands in surrender inside his stopped car. As Green is attacked in his vehicle, he pleads, "I'm your brother. I'm scared. I'm scared." the officers identified in a wrongful death lawsuit as troopers Dakota Moss and Corey York and Master Trooper Chris Hollingsworth then violently remove Green from the car and tackle him to the ground, where he's seen lying face down as he's placed in a chokehold and punched in the face by one officer while another calls him stupid. Green apologizes but is stunned again before being handcuffed and shackled and then dragged across the ground. He's left there alone for over 9 minutes. The troopers offered no medical assistance despite Green's agonized moans. Several minutes later in the footage, Green is seen lying limp and unresponsive with blood flowing from his face and head. An ambulance eventually arrives and Green is shackled onto a gurney and taken to hospital where he was pronounced dead shortly after arrival. In a separate body camera microphone, the recording previously obtained by the AP, Hollingsworth boasts to colleagues that he bit Green, choked him and everything else trying to get him under control, Hollingsworth says in the audio recording. He was spitting blood everywhere and all of a sudden he just went limp. Last September, Hollingsworth died following a single vehicle highway accident hours after learning he would lose his job over his role in Green's death. According to a wrongful death lawsuit filed by Green's family, the trooper's excessive use of force left their